Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And you know Employee Cycle, we're the people dashboard that helps all of you HR and people leaders out there to automate your HR reporting and analytics process. Why do we do this? Because we heard your cries about the tedious, time-consuming, and manual process of HR reporting. That's right, we know how you struggle with logging into all these different HR systems, HRIS, ATS, engagement, performance, have to pull all these spreadsheets together. And you know what? We all know you've been thinking there has to be a better way. Well, there is. Check out Employee Cycle, the people dashboard that has pre-built connectors to all of the most popular HR systems out there. Simply connect all your systems like 15.5, Bamboo HR, Namely, Zenefits, ADP, Paylocity, Greenhouse, too many that I can say without running out of breath. Connect all your different HR systems to our dashboard. We pull it all in so that you can view, track, share, and analyze all your real-time people dashboard and data in one place. Go to employeecycle.com. Check us out. Would love to give you a demo. All right, that's enough about me and our company, because today we have a great guest. Please help me welcome to the show, Hannah Hanks. She's the head of people ops at Trail of Bits, which is a very cool name. And today we're going to discuss how to onboard yourself as the first people leader. Hannah, welcome to the podcast. Woo! Hannah, welcome!
Happy to be here.
Awesome. So, Hannah, we're going to kick this thing off the best way we know how, and that's by asking you, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Ooh, that's always such a funny question, right? How does anyone end up here? I was in the communications background and didn't know really what that meant. It was specific, actually, health communications, which was a new major and degree at my school. And, you know, I had to think through what really did I want to do with my life, right? What do I want to be when I'm older? And I would say that's actually a continued journey that I'm still on. But I found the job searching process very difficult. And so for me, I, you know, applied to 150 jobs, went on all these interviews, did all this networking, and was still coming up short. And, you know, somebody approached me from a staffing agency through a referral and said, hey, do you want to help other people find jobs? And I was like, well, it's a really challenging process. So if I can make it less challenging and a little bit more smooth for somebody else, hey, that sounds like a pretty cool gig. So went and started my career in the staffing agency. And I've done a whole bunch of different types of HR recruiting, talent management, and onboarding, and manager training, and learning and development. So put my hands in a couple different pieces of the pie before I landed in people operations.
Got it. And so, Hannah, we're talking about onboarding yourself as the first people leader. And I'm sure people are thinking, what does that even mean? Mm-hmm. And just to give some context, right before we started, you were telling me that you're the first people leader at your company. Mm-hmm. And as we were thinking about that, it dawned on me that if you're the first people leader and the first person in the people team and function, well, who's going to help you onboard you to get to know the company and the team and the processes? So I'm very curious, what has that experience been, especially since you recently started during COVID and remote work and everything else that's going on in the world?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting experience and a really interesting challenge. I've actually done this a few different times at my last few companies, is coming in as the first talent person. And in some ways, that's the first recruiter. And then they add more to your plate, or you add more to your plate. And then for others, it's, hey, can you come in as head of talent management? And in this capacity, it was head of people operations. And so I'm focused really on the employee lifecycle from start to finish. And while recruiting and engagement and performance is a piece of that pie, it really is the entire employee journey and experience. And so, of course, onboarding is a large piece of that. And so the team that I've joined, you know, I report directly to the CEO and co-founder, and he has done a fantastic job from the time that the organization was founded in 2012. He loves documentation. He loves process maps. He loves to be able to say, hey, this is what's working. What things can we iterate and evolve in the future? And so I did come into a pretty amazing structure that was leadership-led, management-led as well as employee-led all the way down. The organization is fantastic about employing and empowering individuals to say, hey, get after it, right? Go figure out what things work and own that process. And so the team has been so collaborative, but it's also some of the things that make it most challenging is being in the people operations world. It's some of the more cushy, soft stuff about how do people feel and what do they need and how do they grow and why do they come and why do they stay? And so being onboarded through that, I'm almost having to do this navigation and this discovery on my own because there isn't really a standard process. You know, we use things like the donut integration in Slack and we use some, you know, email templates, but of course there's refining that can always happen. And the people operations lens that I bring, I think really round out that employee experience as we think about what things people need as they join an organization, right? Like as we think about, wow, what does somebody need to do in their first week? What objectives do they have? You know, some of our non-people operations folks don't necessarily think with that lens initially. And so I'd say it's an interesting journey to go through as you think about not just onboarding yourself, but then also thinking more broadly, how do I make this process better for someone else?
Got it. So I want to break this up into a few different areas as we'll talk about the tactical sides of being onboarded as the first people leader and people person, but then also from the strategic standpoint. So starting on the strategic side, as you were onboarded through this process, how did that work with you and the CEO? Because it's a little different than just an individual contributor being onboarded. And so here's your job. This is what you do. Here's your package. Fill out the forms. Now let's help you thrive. This is a very strategic partnership where you're not just being onboarded as a team member, but you're actually coming in to collaborate on the entire strategy around people. Mm-hmm. So it's this employee slash true business partner combination. How does that change the dynamic of being onboarded?
Yeah, you know, we actually broached those topics pretty deeply during the interview process. We wanted to both be aligned on the same things, everything from performance and compensation philosophy to giving and receiving feedback to leadership styles to what's important to people and how to run a business. And so we had some really transparent and open conversations during my interviews and even just, you know, personal phone calls like, hey, I had this idea. Can we talk through this? Or, hey, I wanted to get your thoughts in this way. And so we really broke down and got vulnerable pretty early, even before I started with the organization. And that's actually one of the main reasons why I chose to join is that I felt connected to his vision and to his strategy and knew what he was doing for the organization was something I could jump onto and something I could really partner with. And so I think for me, one thing that we did, you know, I took some time, I started right before Christmas and the New Year holiday, which was an interesting time. And one that people are like, really? Why would you do that? No one's really going to be in the office. But it allowed me to kind of sit and observe and poke my head into a couple different areas and understand what was happening before I put my own, hey, this is what I think we should do lens on it. And so I took a couple weeks to do that. I put together an entire 2021 proposal. You know, I've seen this done a couple times. And so I know what pieces need to, you know, I have my own kind of unofficial playbook, if you will. I know what pieces need to happen and each organization, how it happens, when it happens, and what way it happens is always going to be different and customizable. And so I put my proposal together. We presented it to the entire organization. You know, the CEO and I met and kind of talked through things, moved things around. And then I just put everything into a spreadsheet, a project plan, and said, hey, this is what we need to get after each month. And this is what needs to happen. Here are the stakeholders. And we knew we were shooting for the moon. We're saying, hey, this is what we want to get after in a year. But knowing that things are going to change month by month as things, you know, come in effect, really that prioritization exercise. We put goals together, you know, we started to roll out some of these things. So we are in lockstep every step of the way as we think about ongoing strategy and more tactical things and how to get after them, what challenges we can run into, blockers, dependencies, stakeholders, and we're meeting every other week to review that project plan and its progress.
Got it. So in a typical interviewing process, whether it's middle management or an individual contributor, that person, even though they may be interviewing the company to make sure that it's a good fit, they aren't necessarily having the luxury to be able to talk to a lot of different people, a lot of different stakeholders, get access to them. Typically, it's just the people who are in their standard interviewing process, whether it's for marketing or sales or whoever the people that are involved in that process. But for this, because it's so much more strategic and high level, as you were being interviewed, who did you actually get access to and request access to in order to speak with, to understand the culture, the vibe, the goals, just how this business operates for you to even want to be a part of this organization in the first place?
Absolutely. And I think that's an important consideration, right? And I was lucky enough to know someone that worked at the company already. She's in a leadership role as well. And, you know, I see her as a peer and someone that I feel very strongly and take her opinions and take her recommendations very, very strongly. And so I had a lot of fantastic chats with her about the organization, her own growth, what her thoughts are about the organization. And then during the interview process more formally, I had a chance to meet with practice leads and members of the team across the organization as well. So I wasn't just getting the leadership lens, I was getting the individual contributor lens as well as the management lens as well.
From a lot of HR leaders that I interview, they talk about how the onboarding process is so important because it could be the make or break inflection point of an employee's success at their company, based off of how they're onboarded, who they get access to, how they're acclimated to the culture, and how they're really set up for success. So who was the person or team that was responsible for making sure that that happened for you, despite them actually having a people person setting up a standardized process to really get that done?
Sure. So we do have an operations team that's made up more broadly of finance. You know, we do have a head of or director of operations as well. That's, you know, keeping, she's the glue. She's fantastic. Has been with the organization for many, many years, knows every which way things are happening. And so she's been fantastic. She really has been the person that I go to most. You know, we have a Slack channel that we as a larger team are collaborating in. We have a weekly meeting that we're touching point with as well. So she's been fantastic, and the entire operations team and their support has been wonderful.
Got it. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. A lot of employees have been struggling with understanding the culture of companies because they can't walk in and assuming they're not expecting to see people playing foosball and water slides in the office, even just to walk in the office and see, is this open door versus closed door? How are people dressed? How are people talking to each other? Is it loud? Is it quiet? Do you see a bunch of people collaborating around laptops? Or do you see mostly people head down, just working in silos? Without all of that, it seems to be pretty difficult to really gauge the temperature of the culture and what is the culture like. So how did you go about doing that?
Yeah, so I think COVID in general and really this future of work, this remote workforce kind of tidal wave that we've had most recently over the last year has really broken down the norm or really the expectations of what is culture. And, you know, one thing that I personally feel strongly about is getting away from using the word culture fit. I just don't think that it makes any sense to fit somebody in a box that you've created and think more so about culture add or culture, you know, what is the culture that we want to create and how do our new hires positively influence that? How do they challenge us? How do they make us better? How do they expand that culture? And so I actually think that remote working has really expanded what culture even means. It's, you know, ways of working, it's norms, it's practices, it's, you know, silly things that we do in Slack. It's how we start our meetings. It's the way that we communicate with each other. And so I've been trying to be very in tune with that, but even asking more broadly of, hey, typically, how do you guys share this information? Or are you using threads in Slack? Or are you someone that, you know, likes to be camera on videos, you know, asking really forward leaning questions about ways that we communicate, because I think that's the baseline of how culture is established, especially in this remote workforce, is, you know, we've never met in person and we haven't had a chance to sit one-on-one and have a cup of coffee or, you know, work back to back, you know, all day in an office. And so I think the entire idea of culture is continuing to expand and evolve in this remote setting.
Yeah, there's a lot of studies that's been proving that culture fit is a big reason why you have a lot of toxicity in a lot of companies. And it's the reason why you keep hiring the same types of people. And so culture fit actually is, you know, a big part of the problem of lack of diversity in a lot of businesses. So definitely kudos to you for following the culture ad trend. But speaking of culture, as you're onboarding yourself into this culture that already exists, but as you said, culture should be a living, breathing thing that's constantly changing and evolving as new people come into the workforce. Mm-hmm. But as you are onboarding yourself / getting onboarded into this culture, as the typical person who is responsible for the driving of the culture, maybe not creation, but the driving of the culture, which people and HR leaders are typically are, how do you decide how much of it do you embrace and understand before you start to try to drive it to the next level?
I think that's a really good question. You know, I'm only being a little over a month in. I definitely don't feel as if I'm at the point yet where I can start making recommendations unless something's glaringly, you know, out of place, you know, but nothing is at this point, really. I'm still just observing. And so we do a fantastic job to do engagement surveys. We use Culture Amp for engagement surveys. While we don't have company values yet, that's something that we're going to do and create soon. We're going to do a company values workshop where people actually share what's important to them and what they feel as if the company values are explicitly and not explicitly, and what things that they want to follow and put down on paper as our kind of guiding light. And so I don't think I've had a chance yet to really get a full grasp, since I think some of it's still undefined. But I think being able to see and live and experience and observe what's happening, you know, at some point I will need to, of course, be able to provide some recommendations. But I think not enough time has passed, and I don't exactly know if there's a determined time as much as it's a comfort thing or an overall observation.
During this onboarding process, with you being the first people leader and not really having anything to benchmark in regards to what's better or what was done worse than a previous people leader because no one was there, how do you figure out and set the bar for success?
Yeah, so I am constantly asking my fellow employees that have been there about context, historical context. What have we done? What have we tried? What worked? What didn't work? I'm asking constantly for direct and open feedback, because I tell them, I'm like, anything that I do is for your all benefit. I want to make sure that what we're doing is not just checking a box, that it is embedded into our norms and our cultures and our way of working. And so if there are, you know, things that they can share, feedback, experiences to help me understand how to move forward, that can only help me benchmark my own success. But I think you bring up a good point. What is that benchmarking data if we don't have it to look back to? And so with the engagement surveys, we do benchmark against other industries or other leaders within our industry as well. So the system does allow for some of that benchmarking data. You know, we're doing a compensation analysis right now. We're using benchmark data for that. And so we are trying to be a data-driven, data-led organization as we move forward. But with culture, it's an interesting one of how do you really quantify and assess what that even looks like. So I think it's an open question.
Thanks for that. And the last question, so that our audience can get to know you a little bit more. We've been talking about culture a lot, and a lot of times when you talk about culture, there's a few different words that can define that culture. So if we were defining the culture of Hannah Hanks, which words would you use to define your own personal culture?
It's an interesting one. What I think about is some of my truest values, things that I look for in the people I surround myself with and things that I value about myself. And I'd say it's trust, probably fundamentally, is establishing a sense of trust, establishing a sense of transparency and honesty. I think anything and everything that we do should be with honesty in mind. And I would say it's being driven and forward-looking. If we're not thinking about later today or tomorrow or next week, how are we really thinking about what we do and how we move forward? And so I'd say those are probably the three key values that I look for in my own culture.
Awesome. Hannah, thanks so much for being such an awesome podcast guest and for shedding some light into what you stand for. And you sound like a great person to be around. So we really appreciate that. But Hannah, really appreciate you being here and for allowing us to be the first podcast that you've been on. And so thank you so much, Hannah.
Woo! Go, Hannah!
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate being here.
Awesome. So, Hannah, where can people find you and Trail of Bits online?
You can find us at trailofbits.com, and you can find me on LinkedIn, Hannah Hanks.
Great. And we'll definitely share your contact info in the show notes. So, everyone out there listening, if you enjoyed this interview as much as Hannah and I did making it, then please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, because that shows that we're providing great content. Also, if this is the very first time you're listening to our show, and you came to this episode because you either thought that this topic was super compelling, or you're already a huge fan of Hannah's and you just had to hear what she was going to say, but now you're hungry for more interviews and for some reason you can stand the sound of my voice, then please subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other major podcast platforms. And all of you really awesome and special HR people leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.